Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about the World Atlas of Cheese. You'll hear the welcome rain in the background as I'm outside. I can't sit away, and I'm underneath this, I suppose, plexiglass roof. It's the World Atlas of Cheese by Nancy Erkoff Stork. That's Erkoff with a double E. I typed it in and to get some images of her. And no, there's no images of Erkoff Stork that you can get, because I wanted to picture her. There's some pictures I thought here might be of her, but it's not inside the book. They're of good friends of her. And you look, and she's produced in 1976 a classic, two classics, but this is generally the same classic. And if you want to get hold of this book, you can order it from Amazon and eBay. It's only $3 on eBay. It's sort of, yeah. What's the world coming from? Does anyone really appreciate it? So we've done Living with Cheese in Your Home, after an introduction to cheese, a country-by-country dissection of it. Now, that's actually quite interesting, because it's actually got that information and churned it, so to speak. You churn butter in certain ways, and we've gradually began to know cheese a little bit more, the lactose, the sugar of it, the water, the cheese fat, which is comes out as ghee on the surface of things, it scoops off as cream, so to speak, and the various chemicals. Now, you've got the casein, which forms into curds, and the rest of the stuff in the whey is the albumin. This is a globular molecule with four disulfide bonds. So four disulfides mean there's eight serine amino acids in the protein, the combination protein, and that means that this is a bit more resistant to acidity before it comes out, but it means that you can solidify the casein one way, and casein actually forms little cases around the fat molecules. So if you churn butter, you break the casein open and release the oil. Well, the oil can actually be stored in the casein and form your cheese down stop. The top, the whey, is got the albumin. And the albumin is the stuff that when you heat up forms skin. And of course, if you blow superheated bubbles through it, like cappuccinos, the froth is an albumin. It's a protein froth that people love. It's particularly tasteless, I think it would. I don't think it's much taste in albumin. Okay, now this is, you've done cheese, living with cheese, and this is the cheese shops, how to cut cheese, and a couple of pages there. Now this is cheese in your home. Okay, this is rather an external life of cheese. This is cheese in the most intimate storage. So this is knowing about cheese, going to the cheese merchants, cheese super, and you've now bought the cheese, and now you're taking it home. Erkoff Stork, page 202 of this monster book. Well, it is a long book for me. Even though it's got beautiful pictures, it's got a beautiful picture on page 203 of a rather nondescript rendezvous, which looks rather ugly to me, but there's a group of 70s people, 70s men with 70 glasses, and but all having fun, eating cheese. There is no doubt that the majority of cheeses have a beauty and attractiveness entirely of their own. After all, some cheeses have taken hundreds of years to perfect. It's right that they should be uniquely appealing. A fine wedge of farmhouse brie on a straw mat, a yielding Camembert in its chipwood box, a fresh goat's milk cheese wrapped in a bright green autumn-tinted leaves, a noble piece of blue-veined cheese next to a bunch of grapes, a mellow, honey-coloured slice of old Gouda on a simple wooden cheese board. All of these promise delight that are ambassadors of good taste. This is Erkoff at her very best. And of course, I'm trying to improve my reading skills. And as I go back over podcasts, I say, look, I can improve. But I'm actually doing solo rehabilitations, trying to improve. Cheese is both cosmopolitan and democratic. For it's eaten almost throughout the entire world, the cheese is most frequently enjoyed just as it comes, in generous portions accompanied across the fresh bread or crackers washed down with beer or wine. It is especially important in the kitchen as an ingredient to simple, wholesome dishes and highly refined cuisine. Cheese has a traditional place on the table, is taken into sandwiches to work, and is indispensable in the good restaurants. The increasingly worldwide popularity of cheese is due not only to its remarkable variety, but also because its modern transportation and storage techniques have made the selection available to most areas, and thus more easily available to the average consumer than ever before. That's what all that post-war development, the Marshall Plan up to the 1970s, came across. So the Marshall Plan is that Europe was devastated, and the Americans thought, why don't we invest in Europe? Let's build it up. Pretty good idea. This new emphasis on cheese follows the current trend in interest in food generally, encouraged by food manufacturers, by advertising and shops everywhere. I should also point out that the Marshall Plan thinking was lost when it came to Iraq, and so when Iraq needed money injected into it, they decided not, and they got the Iraq that they paid for. Room temperature. In the first place, cheese must be eaten at the right temperature. There you go. You remember the story last time? If you take free cheese out of the fridge too much, it can actually get moisture on it. Soft, semi-hard varieties are best enjoyed around 20 degrees Celsius. Fresh cheese is a little cooler. If the cheese is stored in a cold cellar or refrigerator, it should be allowed to reach room temperature to unfold its taste and aroma to the full. It may be a matter of an hour, but sometimes much longer, depending on the difference in temperatures between the storage place and the room. And also, of course, the type of cheese. Hard cheese requires more time than a soft one. In the final analysis, however, it's largely a matter of personal preference. Only experience will tell you exactly how long is needed before each cheese reaches the temperature where it treats your nose and tongue to the perfection that it promises. Yeah, well, so that's typically the typical person who grabs some cheese from the fridge and puts it straight in their mouth. The spirit of Urquhart should come out and say, no, storage. Where should you keep cheeses between the purchase and consumption? The spot you must choose must not be too low a temperature, as the cutting surface of the cheese, and so the rind, are inclined to dehydrate, impairing the taste and smell. Granted, in these days of modern houses with the central heating, it's no easy task to find a cool, not a hot, cold place. If you have a cool cellar, you are lucky, because there's nothing better. Preferably, cheeses should be placed in a clean, unpainted, unvarnished wooden board. The cut surface of a cheese can be smeared with butter before being covered with aluminium foil to shrink, or shrink foil, or wrapped in a damp cloth. But do this only with a semi-hard or hard cheese. Soft cheese can never be put in damp cloths, as they are best kept in their own wrapping. If it's not the cupboard only, if it is a cupboard, remove the cheese and wrap it in aluminium foil and transparent film. So there you go. If you do cut the cheese, spread it with butter, so to keep it nice and thin. Refrigerators, of course, can be used, yet the temperature there, 3 degrees to 4 degrees, is really too low for cheese. Protect the cheese by placing it in a plastic bag, and it should be tightly closed. Then wrap the entire piece. Now, it's interesting that now that when you pre-slice the cheese, they slice it with, and they store it in a nitrogen atmosphere. I didn't really understand that. The crisper or vegetable bin at the bottom of the unit and a place inside the door are the least cold. Never wrap small pieces of cheese together. Their flavours will mingle and they'll lose their individuality. Cheeses should never be placed in a freezer where the temperature is -300 degrees Celsius. In most cases, the cheese will be destroyed, or at least their quality hopelessly impaired. For example, cheeses lose their creamy structure and become unpleasantly crumbly. Now, that's true. I think there'll be a molecular bond in there. I just wonder if the noise of this is too loud. You can't hear me. Yes, I mean, we're just doing this for therapy here. I'm doing it for therapy. Yet there are some varieties better capable of withstanding the freezer climate, such as quark types. Now, I have to admit to you that I didn't know quark before I knew. Quark for me was a fundamental particle, but now I have to understand what quark is. These should be thawed slowly afterwards and not refrozen. So you can store quarks. Oh, here's a nice black and white picture of cheeses. How long can cheeses keep? The semi-hard and hard cheese varieties can be kept for weeks. They may be bought in fairly large quantities and sometimes cheaper buying them in small pieces. Store them carefully and cut each time a piece of large enough to be eaten within a few days. The full-sized cheese certainly looks attractive on a cheese board, but to bring it repeatedly into room temperature does not improve the cheese, even though doing it once will not harm it. Much more sensitive are the soft cheeses due to their high moisture content and the fact that their surface ripening and mold development continues. There are three groups. Soft cheeses with a tendency to become runny, such as Brie, Camembert and Lederkranz. They have a very short life. When you buy them, they should be new or almost ripe. Eat them once at once or on the next day. If you need to keep them longer, wrap them in aluminium foil at room temperature. Remember that once a cheese turns liquid, it will not solidify in the refrigerator but only dry out. Cheeses with a firmer paste, such as Pont d'Oeuvre and Reblochon, can be kept in the refrigerator for some days. These cheeses continue to ripen, however, and once they pass their peak, the quality quickly deteriorates. Speedy consumption is thus recommended. Fresh cheeses such as thick cream cheese, cottage cheese, Spiesquark, Creme Chantilly and Petite Suisse, for example, are less sensitive and can be kept in the refrigerator for some weeks, even if they have become open or cut into. Finally, they're the foil-ripened and vacuum-packed cheeses. They may be stored for long periods as long as their wrapping is not opened. Do not discard. Soft cheeses cannot be stored too long at room temperature without becoming runny or overripe. In comparable circumstances, harder cheeses start to sweat their fat. However, a wrongly treated cheese needs to be need not be totally discarded. Fat drops can be wiped off with a dry cloth, and should the cheese become too dry, it still can be ground or grated and then sprinkled on sandwiches and used with casseroles, soups, and or other hot dishes. Next time, look for a better storage place. Molds can also be told off by stalkers. Stalkers told you off. You know, you've mistreated a cheese. Just go on. Carry on. But the stork will know. Molds may also be wiped off without causing any health risk. If the mold has penetrated into the cheese, then a layer can be cut away. Even dried blue vein cheese need not be thrown away. A lovely cream cheese can be made by adding it to butter or cream. Selecting and serving cheese. The intriguing variety of the world's cheeses, fresh, soft, semi-hard, hard, mild, strong, sharp, tasting, with the either blind, spicy, pithy, fruity aromas, guarantees that there is surely something for everybody. Surely. And however exciting it is to find new cheeses, experimenting and trying to gather from the packaging what the contents promise. On the other hand, the wide choice can be very difficult too. But what is needed is some method of deciding how and when to use cheeses. Perhaps some guidance can be given here. With bread, the semi-hard to hard cheeses are preferable, as everyone knows best what she likes, if she likes. A mild or perhaps more pronounced type, members of the family can have diverging tastes in cheese as well as other things. Satisfying everybody by putting both mild and young cheese and older and more pithy cheese on the table. On the cheese plate, following the main meal, there should be at least three types of cheese, wildly different in character. The food and the drinks being served are among the things that influence the cheese selection. This is discussed in greater length in the section on cheeses and wines. For cooking, the flavour is not the only point to be concerned about. The textures and melting qualities are also important. Sometimes you need a good melting variety which does not pull into threads, e.g. rachelet or cheese for hot cheese canapés. The thready varieties that have their place too, in fondue, which you want long molecules there, and in mozzarella. And sometimes, as for cheese schnitzels, you need a cheese that becomes soft but does not melt completely. For soups and sauces, you can choose amongst the piquant and hard types that are not are so suitable for grating. Consult the recipe section at the beginning of page 206. We're not too far off. Another important thing to take into account is the best time to enjoy each particular cheese. Breakfast, for example, is hardly a time to have a piece of Roquefort with a glass of Burgundy. Nor should a cheese be cheese dessert be served after Japanese... I've never heard this. Sukiyaki, or Chinese meal. I've never heard. But few Italian spaghetti dishes are complete without cheese. Your own good taste, backed up by some knowledge and experience, is your best guide in the world of cheese. Nutritive value. Cheese is an important place in the diet. Not only it's good to eat and pleasant and additive enjoyment of life, it's a complete food in itself. Cheese contains the most of the nutrients the human body needs, and in concentrated form. I don't think it contains iron. It contains casein, albumin, and globulin. I think globulin is actually the name for casein and albumin, of which casein is the most important. Casein is found in milk and milk products only. And these cheese proteins are particularly valuable since they are built up into amino acids from the human body, which can synthesize their own protein. Well, this is a really poor understanding. Erica lets us down when she says, the moment you go above the Arctic Circle, it's 6 months day and 6 months night. And her understanding of protein chemistry is not there. But Erkoff, I forgive you. Moreover, most cheeses are rich in milk fat. See, you know what really irritates me, I must say, is that people who don't know the science, you can't stop them. Erkoff, I'm sure if I could phone up Erkoff now and have a conversation with her, she'd say, right, I understand. But a lot of people who haven't read Erkoff and haven't read physics just really go over. Moreover, most cheeses are rich in milk fat. During preparation and ripening, the fat has been partly broken down, like proteins, making it easily digestible. Cheese contains several vitamins, water-soluble vitamin B, as well as fat-soluble vitamins A and D. This is an important thing, that a lot of your vitamins occur in fat. And, of course, you need lots of vitamin B. It is also an impressive list of minerals. Indispensable for the human body are calcium and phosphorus, both of which can be obtained for the greater part from milk and cheese. Cheese lacks those fattening carbohydrates such as milk sugar. That's right, the milk sugar, the sugar has been taken out of the cheese, which have largely converted into milk acid during the production process. Along with the protein, fat and carbohydrate values, we have indicated that calorie values of cheese varies on the list of these pages. The calories have been calculated according to the energy value of various cheeses. The caloric value per weight fluctuates with the fat and moisture content of the cheese. The lower caloric value, the higher the moisture content of the cheese. The higher the caloric value, the fatter the cheese. The moisture content can only be indicated approximately as it decreases as the cheese gets older. The one with the well, cottage cheese has got the best. Danbo, the worst one is Gouda. Gouda and cheddar. There's a thing, and calories. The calorie ones, which is the worst calorie cheese? Well, the worst one is Emmental, my favourite one. I don't know how that gets up there. Because I think it's protein and stuff like that. Protein and fats. The best one is cottage cheese. Oh, and Spies Quark, it's got no fat. Of course, it's not a fat cheese. The fat's with the casein. And so Spies Quark is by far the best. Spies Quark, 5% fat, is the best. So, you can make fatless Spies Quark. Okay, recipe use with cheeses. There's going to be so much background noise. I'm going to put this out. And I will read this cheese recipes for you. And then cheese and wine is the section. And after cheese and wine, make your own cheese is another section. And it finishes off with processed cheese is the last thing. Make your own cheese and processed cheese, sort of the end of the earth. So she imagines everyone can and will go to a cheese shop. People will make their own cheese, and then of course the people who are left out standing in the room I get to hear about processed cheese recipes. And this is a beautiful part. Urquhart at her best. Let down a bit in geography, let down a bit in protein, amino acid chemistry. Bye for now. Thanks for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.